I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke.
What have you been up to? Have you got any news for me? Have you been listening to anything fun?
In terms of programmes, true crime programmes, I have been watching the original Unsolved Mysteries, which I think we spoke about before, proper old school, because I enjoyed the new reboot so much. But I've also been listening to a new podcast, probably not a new podcast, but a podcast that's new to me, like something that I've recently discovered. Really enjoying it because I really like sort of crime noir. I just love all that kind of stuff. So it's called Murder in Hollywood Land.
Oh, fun. Yeah, I've seen that actually.
Yeah, and I'm really enjoying it. Really enjoying it. So I think I've only got about one or two episodes left. I think it's like seven parts to it, and they're like an hour each or something. But yeah, been consuming that quite a bit, enjoying
What's
that.
the style of it then? What does it feel like? Like, is it kind
Crime
of a,
noir.
yeah, so it's just classic. Yeah.
Yeah, like early sort of 1940s or
Yeah.
so, murder like in Hollywood and all the sort of gossip
Quite
and
dramatic the way that they do it, or is it just more about?
yeah, but it's all about sort of gossip and drug taking and all the kind of gossip and oh, prohibition. So it might actually
Ooh.
must be 20s, I think.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so that's like
Yeah.
flapper girls and yeah.
If it's if prohibition, they've been talking about prohibition, so it must actually be 1920s, not 1940s, and talk about underground bars and all that kind of stuff. And I just love all that kind of stuff.
Also quite funny because obviously during the lockdown there was places doing like secret bars and secret lock-ins and stuff like that.
Really?
Oh yeah, I read some news articles down south especially. There was places that were getting dobbed in for basically bars opening when they weren't allowed to and letting people in the back door and having secret lock-ins.
I didn't know that.
I'm not cool enough to get invited to any of those, clearly.
No, I'm not in the hot gossip group, so I would never find out about these things.
I'd probably find out by accident, like, knock on the
Yeah.
wrong door and be like, oh gosh, I'm so sorry. Oh, you got
Yeah. I'd overhear someone in the taxi queue or something. That's the only way I would find out.
Yeah, I wouldn't dob them in or anything, but I probably wouldn't. I'm t yeah, I'd be too scared to go.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm not cool enough to be in that gossip circuit.
Also, not worth getting a criminal record over.
No.
I've got so much wine in my house. I
Yeah,
don't need to go to a kind of dodgy lock-in with people that I probably wouldn't choose to spend my time with normally.
exactly. I mean, I've got a decent bar at home now. I've got a good drink selection. There would be no need for me to be locked into a pub with a bunch of randos, so.
Yeah, and you don't ever have to tip Sean when he brings you your drinks, so.
No, exactly. So, and I can just click my fingers and they're there, within like 30 seconds. So that's much better than the service I would get at any pub.
And you're allowed to sexually harass that bartender.
Nah, I've been together 5 years. That never happens anymore. The romance is long dead.
As long as he keeps bringing you drinks, I wouldn't complain about it, to be fair.
I love how you said sexually harass, and I link that with romance.
Lucky
But
Sean is
yeah.
a lucky man.
But yeah, so that's really all my chat, really. What about you? What have you been up to?
So last night we watched something and it turns out I've seen it before. I've seen it before in 2015, must have been when it was first on TV. So Richard has now sat and listened to me make the same exclamations twice in the same documentary. It was called The Confessions of Thomas Quick. It's a really weird one, and I don't know how I didn't remember it from before. Maybe I've got a feeling we might have watched it after a couple of wines, and that's why I don't remember it, because it's about a Swedish man who was in a mental institution, quite high level personality disorder, and he'd basically stabbed someone multiple times and done lots of things that would get you locked up for life and looked after very carefully. He started confessing to a lot of unsolved murders in Sweden and had a lot of the information that only the police knew. And I think he confessed to 39 murders, some really, really, really brutal ones, small children and talking about raping them and all that kind of thing, like really quite extreme stuff. And then later on, a journalist got in contact with him and spoke to him. And he said that he made it all up. So he's actually been convicted, I think, of 8 of the murders. And he said that he made them all up. And when this journalist and another journalist went through all the files and the tapes, turned out that the psychiatric hospital that he was in were really keen to push their method forward. And they thought that, you know, it was going to be like the new Freud. It was going to be a revolution in the psychology and psychiatric worlds. And they kind of led him a bit down a path. And they had a policeman there who was giving him information. And it was very much like, oh, you said, are you sure she wasn't wearing black jeans? Oh, she was wearing black jeans. Yeah, no, that's right. You know, that kind of thing.
I was just about to say, when you start talking about that, I was like, were the police feeding him information by any chance?
Yeah.
Because it sounds very, very similar to Henry Lee Lucas a little bit in terms of all the confessions. And they were saying, oh, but, you know, he's disclosed information that only the police knew or didn't disclose to the public, and yet it's because the police were feeding it to him in order to coerce him to get the confession so they could basically convict him and close the book.
They don't say it outright half the time, they just insinuate it heavily, or they'll,
it's totally coercive. It's not blatant at all.
Yeah,
you know, it, like you say, it's very, very subtle. It's like, you know, are you sure she was there, and you're sure it wasn't on this street it happened, and until they mold it into the outcome, the story that they want. It's such a shame that it seems to be common occurrence in a lot of cases.
But yeah, no, it was really interesting. But yeah, very funny for Richard to keep saying, yeah, we have seen this, by the way. Yeah, no, you said that about his dad being weird before. Yeah, you said that about that part. Yeah, you also said that. And I'm like, really? Am I that predictable? I guess it must be. That's annoying. Never mind.
So are you going to tell me about your case this week?
Yes, I am. All right. So, Joanna, the case that we are looking at today is that of Mikhail Kular, who I believe you're familiar with the case. Is that right?
Yeah, I am aware of this case. I recognised the name and I knew which one it was straight away because obviously it was quite a big case in Edinburgh.
Yeah, definitely. For our listeners, today's case does involve the death of a child. As always, we want our listeners to look after themselves. So if you feel that this episode may be distressing for you, we would advise you to possibly skip this episode or listen to another one instead. This is the case of Mikhail Kular, a 3-year-old boy who lived in Edinburgh in 2014. On Wednesday, the 15th of January in 2014, Mikhail seen around 9 p.m. going to bed in his home in Ferrygate Crescent in the Drylaw area of the city. Are you familiar with where that is, Joanna?
Yeah, I know where Ferrygate is. It's not far from an area that I used to live, and also I knew people that lived in Ferrygate.
So the next morning, around 7:15 a.m, Mikhail's mother discovered that he was missing from his bed and called the police to report him missing. Police Scotland immediately launched a large-scale search operation, including a police helicopter. The missing boy was described as being 3 foot tall, of Asian appearance, and possibly wearing a beige hooded jacket, blue jogging bottoms, brown shoes and nightwear. Around 10:20 a.m, the police released a picture of Mikhail to aid the search. Mid-morning, the police told reporters that there's no evidence to suggest foul play, but that they are keeping an open mind at that point. Over the day, on that Thursday, there was a huge turnout from locals and neighbours to comb the Drylaw area, and there were Coast Guard teams, there were lifeboats searching the shore of the Firth of Forth. A dedicated telephone line was set up as part of a child rescue alert, and that was supported by police across the whole of the UK. The search continued well into the night, and they released another photo of Mikhail wearing the beige jacket that they thought he was probably wearing. They released that to the public to help aid in the search. The Next morning, on Friday the 17th of January, there was hundreds of volunteers who gathered at the North Neighbourhood Centre in West Pilton Gardens to help search for the boy. There were digital billboards across the whole of the UK displaying a missing persons appeal for Mikhail in train stations, shopping centres, town centres, places like that. There had been a potential sighting reported from 8:30 on the Friday morning. It was reported to the media. There was a lot of hope thinking that that possibly could be the missing boy because the child seemed to match his description, apart from the fact that he was wearing a hat when it hadn't been reported that Mikhail was wearing a hat. Unfortunately, that was not the missing boy. On Friday, the 17th of January, at around 6:15 p.m., the Assistant Chief Constable, Malcolm Graham, says that all immediate family members have been traced and spoken to. And this is something that I found really interesting at the time. I remember this being released and just finding it odd. Superintendent Liz McCain, she revealed that Mikhail had not been at nursery since the Christmas break, as he'd been ill. Do you remember that detail coming out? Because that feels like something that both you and I would twig and go, hang on, this is well into January. How long has he been ill? You know, what's the deal?
Yeah, that is quite a while, because you said this was 17th of January, right?
Yep. So it was actually the morning of the 16th that she noticed that he was missing.
Yeah, that's quite a long time. I don't remember that detail being mentioned in the case. I remember the case generally, but I don't remember a lot of the specifics.
They also had a twin sister, and it didn't appear that she'd been off ill, which I find odd as well, because with children, they generally get whatever the other one has. And I think there were four siblings in total, but it was only noted that he'd been off ill since the Christmas break.
Yeah, I mean, when it's kids, I don't have kids, so I can't say, but from experience of other people, it's generally bugs. And as soon as a child gets it, the other children get it. And, you know, if not the parents as well, it's usually the whole family are affected. So it is strange that he would be off alone unless it was a condition that wasn't contagious.
Yeah, absolutely. Later that evening, he's been missing since the Thursday morning. So this is Friday evening. There's still no sign of him, and they've been searching. There's been a huge effort, both police and various organisations and locals and neighbours as well. Essentially, on the Friday evening, the police said, thank you so much for all your help, that's absolutely great, but we're going to continue the search overnight. In the early morning hours, I believe it was around about 1 a.m. on Saturday the 18th of January 2014, the police called a press conference. Shortly before midnight, they had located the body of Mikhail Cooler in a wooded area behind Dunvegan Avenue in Kirkcaldy, Fife. I've got a sound clip of the announcement from Assistant Chief Constable Malcolm Graham.
Good morning, everyone. The investigation into the disappearance of Mikhail Cooler has been wide-ranging and fast-moving. As a result of these inquiries, I can confirm that we've recovered the body of a young boy in Fife shortly before midnight. We have informed the family and the investigation continues. A person has been detained in connection with the death. I would like to sincerely thank everyone who has shown such a fantastic response to the incident in terms of assisting the police with searches and in terms of our appeals for information and coming forward to assist with information. Without such vital assistance, the police cannot do their job assisting those who live and work in our communities. Clearly, as a result of these significant developments, we will not be requiring any assistance with searching activity in the Drylaw area tomorrow morning. And once again, I would like to thank everyone sincerely for your assistance at this time. I'm sure you'll understand, with these developments, I'm not in a position to take any further questions as the investigation continues. Thank you.
Pretty hard hearing, isn't it?
Yeah, you can tell that he's sort of having to compose himself a bit there.
And you can hear the intake from the crowd, and that's journalists who would have been called there. So those are pretty seasoned journalists who were called pretty short notice to go to that announcement. And, you know, you can hear in their voices, it's just literally the worst outcome that anyone could have hoped for. Around 4 p.m. that day, they took Mikhail's body to Edinburgh for official identification. Although they knew who it was at that point, they obviously have to officially get the identification for the wee boy and postmortem. It was confirmed that day that a 33-year-old woman had been arrested in connection with his death, and it was his mother, Rosedeep Adekoya, also known as Rosie. The wooded area Mikhail had been found in was located behind a bungalow owned by his aunt, Pandeep Kular. And Mikhail had once lived there prior to the family moving to Edinburgh. The boy's body was found stuffed into a suitcase. The police had interviewed Rosie several times, and on their third interview, she broke down and finally told them the truth. On the 12th of January, Rosie and a friend had taken Mikhail and his twin sister bowling and for a meal at Nando's. The boy had reportedly misbehaved in a minor manner and vomited when he was going to bed. During the proceedings at court, Alex Prentice QC said the accused lost her temper and both smacked him and struck him on the body with her clenched fist. Mikhail was put to bed but was sick again and hit again on the head and the body. His clothing was changed again and put back to bed, but he was sick again for a third time. His mother lost her temper, dragged him through to the bathroom, clutching his forearms and upper arms. She washed him again and beat him heavily on his back with her hand and her fist as he lay over the bath. And it's likely at this time when internal damage was inflicted to Mikhail. He became dangerously ill as a result of this. She could have saved her son's life, but she didn't want to get medical help because of the bruising. So she didn't want to take him to the doctor because they would have realised that she had abused him. The little boy developed peritonitis. It is very dangerous. You can die of it, clearly, but death can be prevented with early medical intervention.
What's peritonitis?
Peritonitis is the inflammation of the thin layer of tissue that lines the inside of the abdomen. And it's essentially a life-threatening emergency. Everything ruptures and causes bacterial infection, which obviously can lead to sepsis. It can kill fairly quickly, but if you have medical intervention, it can be solved. He developed peritonitis and he was quite listless over the next couple of days and he passed away in the house. His mother, Rosdeep, bundled his body in bedding and put it in a suitcase. She then drove 40 kilometres from her home in Edinburgh to her sister Pandeep's in Kirkcaldy, Fife, and dumped the suitcase in nearby woodland. The next morning, she reported him missing and sparked the massive search efforts. Her phone was later examined and there was a series of internet searches found. Some of the search terms included, "I find it hard to love my son," "Why am I so aggressive with my children?" and "Get rid of bruises." During the proceedings, there was some testimony from psychiatrists. They had examined her. They said that she may have been suffering from a depressive disorder, but they still ruled her fit to stand trial. However, as a result of some of the testimony and various pieces of evidence, they changed the charge from murder to culpable homicide, as well as attempting to defeat the ends of justice. And she pled guilty. On the 25th of August, 2014, Ms. Adekoya was given an 11-year jail sentence by Lord Glenny after she pled guilty. He stated, and this is a quote, "The Crown accept that you had no intention to kill Mikhail. Although you knew you had harmed him, you did not realise, and you could not have reasonably been expected to realise, that beating him had put his life in danger. For that same reason, the Crown also accept that, although the assault on Mikhail was severe and your failure to take him to a doctor was inexcusable, it did not display the wicked recklessness necessary for a conviction for murder. It was not a case of caring whether Mikhail lived or died. You were not even aware that death was a possibility until it happened. That is why your plea of guilty to the lesser charge of culpable homicide has been accepted. Nevertheless, what you did was cruel and inexcusable. Striking a child even once is bad enough. Striking him heavily and repeatedly with hand and fist when he was being sick again and again simply beggars belief. Mikhail was by all accounts a happy, healthy little boy. By your actions, however unintended, you have not only robbed Mikhail of his young life, but left a gaping hole in the lives of all who loved him." What are your thoughts on that statement, Joanna?
I feel that he's shown a bit of sympathy there, I think, which I wouldn't have expected. They've accepted the guilty plea for the lesser charge of culpable homicide, but I just find it devastating. I mean, the fact that he was poorly, you know, I wonder, the fact he was vomiting makes me wonder if he was being sick because of a concussion or something. To feel poorly anyway, and then not to receive the love and care from his mother, and then just to be beaten as a result of being poorly, it's heartbreaking. It is, for all intents and purposes, child abuse. There's no other term for it. It is out and out child abuse. And then to beat him so badly that, well, he essentially died, it's just devastating, to be honest. I think that the judge has been pretty lenient, to be honest. I think that she's probably very, very lucky that she was able to plead guilty to a lesser charge and being sentenced to 11 years as well. I assume that means she'll be out in 5.5. Don't get me wrong, she might be out of prison in 5.5 years, but she'll never have a life. No. She'll never have a life. She would have to assume a new identity. Her life will be, I imagine her life would be a complete nightmare for however long she spends in prison. She'll never outlive what she's done. People will be so outraged, especially when it comes to children. A couple of things I wanted to know was she a single parent?
Yes, she was a single parent at this time. She had children by more than one father. So Mikhail's father actually was married when they met and he had an affair with Rose Deep.
Okay. And if I remember correctly, she had quite a few children, didn't she? And he was one of a twin.
One of a twin, yeah. She had five children, yeah. The rest were female.
There was no problem with any of the other children. It was just him, wasn't it?
That's right. I've got a bit more about her background that might explain it. I found a blog online that I've seen before, which actually seems really interesting if anyone wants to have a look at it. It's called Murder is Everywhere, and one of the writers on there is called Carol Ramsey. I'll just read from it verbatim because I don't know how much of it is hearsay or opinion, and I don't necessarily want to endorse the opinion, but I think it's useful to read. So Carol Ramsey says, "She's a complex lady. Her parents were doctors. Her dad died relatively young. Her mother remarried another doctor. The family are wealthy members of the Asian community. Her five children have complicated parentage. She used to be very overweight. She got gastric band and reinvented herself as a slim chick about town. Before that, there was a history of depression and at least one suicide attempt. On social media sites, she asked questions about why she loved all of her children except one. Why was she so aggressive with only one of her children, and how do you get rid of bruises? Mikhail's father, who already had another partner and had other children by the time Mikhail was killed, says that Rose Deep, or Rosie as he calls her, never got over their breakup and resented the child because he looked so much like the father. That relationship was disapproved of by her family. Rosie, the dancing queen, became a social butterfly after her marriage broke down And it seems to me she began to live life the way teenagers do. She hung about nightclubs with friends of dubious character. Despite having 5 kids under the age of 10, she set up her own beauty business, then continued her love of partying. Her Facebook page was full of photos of her enjoying the nightlife, including one friend who later died in a shooting incident. The parents of her estranged husband always had reservations about her party lifestyle. Her husband tried to curb her behaviour. She objected, so he left and believed that Rosie had moved on to another partner. He divorced her on Christmas Day 2014. Once again, I can't verify all of that information, and some of it seems to me to be someone's opinion, which is worth whatever you want to make it worth. Definitely, there seems to have been depression and a suicide attempt. Some of this is backed up by testimony from other people, especially regarding the fact, like you said yourself, she only really had an issue with Mikhail. She didn't seem to have a problem with any of her other children. He divorced her on Christmas Day, but I've got some information on him, but he essentially said that she seduced him when he was married to someone else and they had a bit of a fling, and she was absolutely obsessed with him, and it turned out she'd been obsessed with him since they were teenagers. He kind of portrayed her as a bit of a bunny boiler. His name is Zahid Said. I've got a quote from him. She killed him because he was a miniature version of me, and in doing that, she was killing part of me too. She was killing me and she was killing my legacy. Her obsession made her love me, but then it made her hate and resent me, and she would stop at nothing to hurt me for rejecting her. I think she killed Mikhail because she couldn't stand to see me and him every day. We look the same and we have the same character. My son was the innocent victim. I just wish she'd brought her anger down on me and not on him. Also, in a strange coincidence, Said was friends with Sheikh Bayo, whose death we covered in a previous episode. Wow. And he was actually with Bayo in the hours prior to his death. I just, randomly came up when I was doing my research, and that was bizarre.
Such a strange coincidence.
Really bizarre. Also, like you said about her sentence, she's been described as a model prisoner. She had special privileges. Other inmates have reported that they believe that she's treated specially and she swans around the prison. She's got a fancy cell. I mean, once again, you don't know how much this is true.
Yeah.
But she definitely has been let out at weekends and to study. She's doing Open University, a degree with them, and she's been seen studying in a library in Stirling. There's pictures around the newspaper. She's dyed her hair and she's lost some weight. But a bit like what you said, you know, people knew straight away that it was her. There's also been some reports that she was given a work placement at a charity shop as part of whatever program she was on in prison. And she was complaining to everyone in the prison saying it was dirty and no one should have to work in those conditions. So there's a lot of not nice things that people are saying about her. I don't know. It is one of those people aren't going to stick up for and be nice about someone who's murdered their own child, but they seem fairly consistent things that are coming out.
It's very strange to me that she's been released to do work placement and studying and stuff, because I would think that she'd need to be under heavy protection.
She's out walking about. I mean, in the pictures, you can have a look through the sources, so can anyone else. There's lots of different articles. And yeah, there's ones of her just walking down the street in Stirling and just sitting in the library.
Yeah, that surprises me. I would have thought that her life would essentially be in danger if she's a convicted killer. And
She's not been convicted of murder, though, has she? She's been convicted of culpable homicide, which is essentially manslaughter.
It's more about the public's perception of that, though, and also other prisoners. I would have thought she would have been segregated for her own safety.
Yeah, I read that she'd been attacked, so I think that that's why she was moved to a special cell. Then that's been portrayed that she's getting special treatment, and things like she's been allowed to see her children, and she's allowed pictures of her children up, and other people aren't allowed those things. I also found it really strange that they actually let her see the body of Mikhail. And they let her decide to have him cremated when his father would have had him buried. So I found those things quite interesting. And I just feel that she's been granted a lot of, what would you say?
Favourable treatment.
Yeah, favourable treatment. But I'm not convinced if it had been a father that had done that. I don't think the father would have got that.
I'm wondering if there are more details to the case that we aren't aware of, that inside the system maybe they are aware of, and it maybe changes the perception somewhat.
She's certainly been vilified by the public and by the media. I would argue it's incredibly difficult not to vilify her. If she had just immediately called the police or called an ambulance when she realised that he'd passed away, I would be in a very different place mentally with this case. It was
absolutely
putting him in the suitcase and take him, and then the fact that she clearly had a very different relationship with him and attitude towards him. Those are the things that I really get hung up on, and I really struggle with those things.
But also just the fact that she stuffed his body into a suitcase, to me, is also
a lack of care.
Yes, it's so almost disrespectful. The way I see it is, when my cat passed away, for example, I, you know, held her and treated her with care, despite the fact that she'd passed away. I would never do something like that to her. I wrapped her up. It's silly things like that, isn't it? So if that's how I treat my pet, I can't imagine having a child that I'm responsible for killing and then stuffing them into a suitcase and disposing of them, filing a missing persons report, having the community involved and searching from that, just that really rubs salt into the wound for me.
Absolutely. I think also, see, if you were trying to go down the postnatal depression argument and say that she didn't bond with him after giving birth to him, she had the daughter as well. You know, they were twins. I'm not an expert on it, but I would find it really unusual that if you had twins, you would bond with one but not the other.
Yeah, I agree. When you were talking about the depression and her treatment of them, I did think postnatal depression, definitely. It is really damaging for mothers that get it. So it sounds like she did have something like that. But like you say, very strange that it was twins and that her attitude to the other twin was apparently okay.
I can understand if she had this deep-seated hatred for his father and he looked like him. But you love your child. This is the thing I just don't get. It's the same thing with the suitcase. I don't get it, because I don't understand how you could bear a child, carry them in your body, bring them to full term, give birth to them, and then that doesn't kick in, or it kicks in for one child, but it doesn't for the other. And he's so meaningless, he's so worthless to her, that she can be angry at him for being sick. I don't understand that. It just infuriates me that she could see her own son being sick and that would have that reaction within her.
It is heartbreaking, because a child is innocent and defenseless, and it's up to you to take care of them. And it just makes me feel so sad that in his last moments on earth, he was poorly, and then from his own mother to be beaten as a result of that suffering, and then die as a result of that beating, is just heartbreaking. You know, I think it's understandable why the policeman was, you know, having to compose himself given the update to the journalists. Because I remember the case when it happened, and it was just so, so sad. And the thing for me as well is that, again, the whole way that she dealt with the situation after, again, for me, it's telling of her character. You know, the judge has said that she lacked the traits that would lead her to be, you know, a sort of premeditated killer. But it's the actions afterwards as well, which just kind of, for me, emphasise the fact that she doesn't have a good level, even probably, of empathy as a general human being.
I'd imagine that there are lots of mums in that prison who cannot abide another mother that
for sure. I mean, I don't have kids, and I think I can honestly say, hand on heart, I would want to rip her head off.
Yeah, same. Absolutely.
If I was there and I saw her behavior, and I think I would be outraged.
I think, though, I also lay a lot of blame at the door of the father, because some of the things that I read, you know, obviously he broke his silence, and then he was coming out with all these damning statements. She was a monster, and she killed him because she couldn't kill me, and all this kind of stuff. He just totally made it all about himself. Yeah. And he left her because he couldn't handle her party lifestyle. Okay, so what, you're just going to leave your kids with her? Because you know that she's out doing whatever, supposedly, and she's not being a good mother. So you're.
But it's good enough. It's good enough for your kids to be brought up by her. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
And
that's
another article said something along the lines of, he regrets that he never really tried to see the kids in the however long before that.
It's the whole mudslinging thing. In my opinion, if you have a child with someone who is showing abusive tendencies, it's your job as their parent to make sure that they are safe at all times. It's not just a case of, I can't handle this, I'm going to leave, but my kids will probably be all right. It's just not how it goes. It's not good enough.
If
her behaviour was that concerning while the little boy was alive, he should have been taking strides to remove those children from her or get custody of them. And, you know, whether he was successful in that or not, it doesn't matter. It's the point of taking those steps towards that. Just coming out and saying it after the fact is just neither here nor there for me.
It's meaningless. It's just words. And I think the fact is, you know, he broke his silence and then did an exclusive. And then when Sheikh Ubayo passed away and it was found out that he was with them and friends with them, he then did an exclusive interview. Am I a cynic? Perhaps. I think he's got his own motivations for coming out with things. And he's not just playing his son as the victim, he's playing himself as the victim. So I'm afraid that is the very, very sad case of Mikhail Kular. I hope you have something nice or fun to cheer me up a bit.
Yeah, it's never easy generally talking about these kind of cases anyway, but when it's children, it's just particularly heartbreaking. So let's have something upbeat, to lift our spirits a little bit. Did you know? The head of any whale washed up on a Scottish beach will automatically become the possession of the king and its tail the queen. Whales technically are classified as royal fish. In Scotland, the queen has a right to whales too large to be pulled onto land by a wain pulled by 6 oxen, which is basically anything over 25 feet long. Although this law is more commonly applied when sturgeon are caught in Scottish waters, another royal fish, the Queen has never requested a sturgeon, but many have been caught and offered to her.
That is amazing. I did not know that. But, being a stickler here, is a whale a fish? I thought it was a mammal.
No, it's not. Like, when I read that, I was like, a whale isn't a fish.
Yeah,
Should I say a whale?
A whale.
Whale. I've been saying it wrong. I've been saying it like whales the country. No, whales are a widely distributed and diverse group of fully aquatic placental marine mammals.
Yes, thank you. Yep, learned something about biology. Not completely wasted my education. Thanks, Mum. But sturgeon are fish.
Yes, sturgeon is a fish, yeah.
I'm so very confused because when I googled sturgeon fish, the first thing that came up said sturgeon, a pond fish with instructions for use. What do you mean instructions for use? I don't get it.
So yeah, so there you go.
I don't think I'd want its head or its tail though. I think they've missed out on like the best parts. I think
the blubber,
the flank, like a steak, like a whale steak. I think
yeah.
In Iceland, they eat whale as well, and I have to admit that when we were there, we did a tasting menu, and as part of that, there was whale in it.
No, Emma.
Yeah, I couldn't eat it. I couldn't handle it.
Most of my dad's side of the family are all animal lovers, and my nana, I used to stay at hers all the time when me and my cousin Leah would go out on the town. I remember I woke up one Sunday morning and she said to me, she went, oh, I got some venison sausages for brunch. And I said, Nana, that's deer. And she went, no, they're only $1.99 for the pack.
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
Honestly, she has come out with some corkers, honestly. Oh, there's actually one I thought of. I just remembered it. We were out for a birthday and for some reason we were talking about washing your clothes and ironing. And
you guys had some wild nights out.
Yeah, no, exactly. But like, I think it's because we were talking about when my sister and I stayed with my nana for a brief period.
Oh, okay.
And we were laughing about how she used to iron our pants. And we were making fun of her. And I said, oh, you don't still iron your pants, do you, Nana? She went, oh, I like my gusset smooth. Of got another one for you. She's still at the gym like 3 times a week, but you know, she's not fit or in shape or anything. So I was like, what does she actually do at the gym? Because the thing is, she can't swim either. So I was like, she's clearly not going in the pool. So what does she actually do there? So I asked her, I said, Nana, I said, what is it you actually do at the gym? She went, I do that run of the mill.
The treadmill, is that what she calls it? Is that what she thought it was called though, or was she joking?
No, she thought that's what it's called.
Oh, she's too precious.
I know, she's brilliant.
Oh, she's too pure for this world.
She's brilliant. I've got another one for you. So she got a new dining table, and this dining table and 4 chairs with it, right? I went over to hers and she said, oh, do you like my new dining table? And I went, oh, very nice. And she went, guess how much? £99.99. And see they chairs? They're that fox leather.
Oh, no. Oh. Oh, God.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to reach out to us, give us any case recommendations, you can contact us on social media. We have a Facebook page, Instagram page, and we're on Twitter. Or you can email us your case suggestion. Our email address is info@murdershespoke.net. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.